I see what you did there, Dazza. Nice. Very nice. When I first saw that song, I'm like, okay, whatever. I saw the name. I didn't think anything of it. I edited it up, and that was my first time listening to that song. I'm like, Dazza knows what he's doing. That's cute.
Yeah. One of the highlights of this show, I think, is the music.
Yes.
Chills.
Exactly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Fetman, and you are listening to On the Comic Couch Radio, Episode 3. And as always, I am joined by my co-host, Dazza. Dazza, how are you doing this fine evening for you, morning for me?
I'm doing fine, apart from the fact that it's autumn, which means winter's coming, and I don't like the cold.
Yeah, unlike you, where you get weather, I live in Southern California, and we get absolutely no weather. In fact, right now, I think the other day it was a blistering 100 degrees.
Yeah, that sounds bliss to me. I can do without winter, put it that way.
Dazza,
if I could break my leg, you know, every winter, so that I could basically have, like, from now till Christmas off, and then just do nothing but sit at home, read, write, and watch movies and stuff, that would be fine by me.
Well, now you know what you need to do now, right?
Yeah.
Break your leg. Okay, it's been a while since we done our last On the Comic Couch Radio. So, what brings you to halfcarded.com to do a show about, you know, I guess a specific comic book? What are we here talking today?
Well, we're talking X Factor. When I say X Factor, the original team of X Factor.
Yes.
Which was basically from 86, I believe it was.
Okay. Now give us an introduction to how X Factor came and about, and how was it presented?
Well, I mean, my first introduction to it was I'd been reading Marvel comics for a couple of years via, you know, the American format and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And there was these little teasers that something was coming up about called X Factor. Mm-hmm. And in the corner of some of the comics, there was a little on the front cover, there was a little thing about, you know, X Factor coming. And inside there was this ad that showed like this file. Mm-hmm. And it's just sort of said, top secret, do not open until November, everything. It was basically, you know, and I was basically sort of new to comics, but I thought this is something X-Men related.
Uh-huh.
And then 1 month there was two comics. It was an Avengers comic and a Fantastic Four comic, which basically kicked the whole thing off.
Ah.
And I never actually read the Avengers one. But basically in the corner it said, X-Factor begins here. Basically, because at the time I basically found this news agent that had all the Marvel comics in, and I basically have this scam going where I would take a bit of my dinner money and mm-hmm. buy a comic every day. So I used to have to choose one a day, and sometimes basically somebody else would get to other ones before me. So
that's horrible.
Upset. So the Avengers one somebody got to before me, but I got the Fantastic Four one.
Well, that just is fine, because back in the day, you know, Avengers wasn't really that big a deal. That's probably why they sold out, because, you know, they only bought so many copies.
Yeah. Well, we'd only buy one copy of each thing. It was just a basic news agent that just happened to basically get Marvel, and we would only get one copy of each one.
Oh, I see.
So it was that kind of deal.
And then you were bringing up your article that the books, while they were Fantastic Four and Avengers, they read heavily like an X-Men book.
Yeah, sort of, because the one I got was the Fantastic Four one. And basically in the Avengers one, what had happened is the Avengers basically found this mysterious pod at the bottom of the ocean,
mm-hmm.
Which they took back to the mansion. The second one, the Fantastic Four, who was actually living at the Avengers mansion at the time, the story was basically them opening the pod and finding out what was in it. And who was in it was actually Jean Grey. Yeah, and she was in the black outfit that she wore the night when she basically became Phoenix.
Uh-huh.
Now, I knew very little about such a Jean Grey. I knew that there'd been an original X-Men team before the one that I was, like, you know, reading at the time. And I knew who the members are, but I knew very little about the mythology. So I'm sure that people who were actually, like, you know, fans from that era were all going sort of, like, you know, apeshit for, like, you know, seeing Jean Grey come out of a cocoon and everything.
Yeah.
But fortunately, pretty much the entire comic was almost like an origin story of Jean Grey, how she basically came to be in the cocoon.
Oh, okay.
And then you learnt all the thing about the fact that she'd basically been swapped by Phoenix and that sort of thing. Because that was the get out, because she'd actually been killed off in the Phoenix saga, and the actual get out was that she, Jean Grey had never actually become Phoenix.
Phoenix took on her persona, or took on her image. Yeah, I remember I read that in the article.
Yeah. So yeah, so it was quite a creative way to actually, you know, sort of to get around that. But so basically the story did a pretty good, you know, deal of sort of like, you know, explaining all this and everything and setting the stage. And of course I sort of pretty much, had the idea that with her back, that what we're actually, X-Factor was going to be a reformation of the new, of the original X-Men. And part of this, I sort of could tell the signs because Cyclops had basically done an issue where he'd left the X-Men,
mm-hmm.
Off and gone off into Sunset. The other X-Men were, Iceman, Angel and Beast were in a comic called, The Defenders,
mm-hmm.
which, and that series I knew was actually coming to a close, well, or had come to a close. So I could see the signs that basically what was being sort of, you know, paved the way for was, you know, the original X-Men, which I was kind of like quite hyped for because I was basically too young to remember them, in the original thing.
Yeah.
So that was kind of quite a, you know, for me, it was kind of like, you know, interesting to sort of see, oh, I'm going to get to see the original, you know, X-Men altogether. So for me, it was quite sort of like, something exciting. And also I knew it was going to be another X-Men book, which, you know, the X-Men was my favorite comic at the time. So the fact that it was going to be another X-Men book was, you know, really exciting to me.
Yeah, it was essentially just the original cast brought back into an original title. I mean, we had the new X-Men where they were doing with their own title, you know, the X-Men title, but they were utilizing this title to bring back the original X-Men without having to interfere with what they were doing with the current run.
Yeah, I mean, there is actually a good reason for that is, and actually, just to go back, originally the idea wasn't to bring all of the X-Men back. The idea was to bring Cyclops, Iceman, Angel, and Beast back.
That's just about everybody though.
Yeah. Originally Jean Grey wasn't actually in the plans.
Mm-hmm.
But they did need, because it was Marvel and we always need to have at least one lady in the team.
Mm-hmm.
The first idea that they came up with was Dazzler.
Okay.
And, because Dazzler has actually had her own solo comic at the time, which was faring particularly badly. It was actually the only comic that I remember at that time, which actually only came out, bi-monthly.
Uh-huh.
You know, so that shows you how, I mean, the whole thing about Dazzler as a comic, I think, was because they actually wanted to do an actual live action character,
uh-huh.
Pop star to do the gimmick. But in any case, she was originally going to be the, you know, she was the first idea. And there was a few other females apparently in the running. I have a feeling that the Rachel Summers Phoenix might have been another suggestion.
Ah, that would have been good.
Yeah, which I think would have been a good idea. But basically, and you can blame a guy called Kurt Busiek for this, the writer, because when he was a kid at a comic, he basically came up to one of the writers and basically came up with this idea of how we could bring Jean Grey back. And they actually, you know, years later, you know, used this idea.
It wasn't the world's worst idea, but it was, I don't know, highly suspect.
Yeah. But yeah, but it does, I mean, it does actually work. But basically then they, you know, because Jim Shooter basically at the time was like, you know, really keen on this thing. But the reason why I say it was basically to keep it away from regular X-Men is it's Chris Claremont,
mm-hmm.
who at the time had been writing the Uncanny X-Men for 10 years already. And he basically pretty much, I think, had seen himself as basically, you know, in charge of anything to do with mutants, basically. He saw, you know, because he was writing Uncanny X-Men, he was writing New Mutants. Whenever there was, I think, a limited series, like when they did the Wolverine one or Kitty Pryde and Wolverine, he was the one, you know, writing them. He basically had an entire vision of what he wanted the X-Men saga to be. And he hated the idea that X-Factor was being brought back. And one of the things, and this is something I sort of, you know, I agree with him of, when I was basically that comics should be sort of something which were ever evolving, the series, not actually going back.
You said that's one of the things you liked about the Marvel books, that you had the constant reshuffling of groups. Whatever had happened would continue on to other groups. And what the X-Factor titles seem to be setting up is a lot of, you know, resetting everything back to its original, back to the way everything was prior to all the years that they, you know, they had changed all these characters, had them evolve, change, grow. And then X-Factor was pretty much the catalyst of, well, we're going to reset everything and reset the table.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one of the things that when I first started getting the Marvel comics is that and this really intrigued me at the time, was I knew all these sort of characters like Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, all these things. But when I actually sort of started to read them, I saw that they'd actually moved on a lot. So, for example, Spider-Man, he had his new black outfit and he'd left school and he was now dating the Black Cat and stuff like that. Fantastic Four blew my mind because when I first, the first Fantastic Four comics I saw had She-Hulk as a member.
Yeah.
And also The Thing basically had his own series. He'd gone solo.
Oh, okay. I know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So this, and it, by the way, one of the things in The Thing series was he actually became a professional wrestler for a while as well.
Awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, so to me, it was really exciting because, like, you know, teams were ever evolving. It was, it was just a really exciting concept they had at the time. And Chris Claremont really sort of, like, you know, had, you know, this in mind because he always saw it that sort of like, characters were basically coming to the team and then some would move on and some would grow as it. I mean, he once mentioned that one of his ideas, you know, possibly was at some stage that Kitty Pryde would basically grow up with the X-Men. Aww. Until she got into a position that she may be actually leading the team.
That'd be awesome.
Now, one of the things that really irked him, this is before he even found out that Jean Grey was coming back, is this was going to do to Cyclops. Because he had basically given Cyclops this like happy ending. So after Jean Grey died, he was sort of like, you know, went through a sort of stage where he was sort of like, you know, trying to find himself. And then he fell in love with Madeline Pryor.
Yeah.
And they basically got married and then they had a child. And his idea was that Scott Summers would actually leave the X-Men because he was now happy and everything. And there's actually this one, well, issue where he actually gets married. There's this like really nice scene where he's actually at Jean Grey's grave. And he basically, you know, talks to her how happy he is, how in love he is with Madeline. And basically thinks he can really sort of like, you know, have a good life. And this was his, Chris Claremont's way of sending him off into the sunset.
Yeah, giving him his happy ending. He had his new wife, his new child, and that, you said the original, I think you said in the article that his original plan was for the most part he was going to retire, but every now and then they'd bust him out of the mothballs and he would do something when I think you brought up the Mutant Massacre where he would, lay the smack down on some people, but for the most part he was just there as, you know, you were going to bust him out maybe once a year, but for the most part he had his happy ending and moved on. And, went off into the sunset.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It would be about basically like, you know, a character for special occasions, you know, and for guest stars, but he wouldn't be part of, you know, an active member anymore. You know, that was his sort of like, you know, he was moving on, leaving the way for somebody like Storm to like, you know, become the leader and that sort of thing, you know, for other characters to come on and have their story.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the guys who suggested, you know, X Factor, they're basically, what they did was they saw, oh, Cyclops isn't being used. We need to have a comic with Cyclops in. And it's this sort of, it's this like weird idea that, you know, because back in those days, you know, characters would sort of like, you know, go off for a while, you know, but they'd take a break and like, you know, refresh themselves. Nowadays, it seems to be that every single character has to basically be on an active comic, you know, whereas back then it was.
I'd argue that because there's a couple of characters that I would really like to see Marvel do more. In fact, I think the other night we were just talking about the Molly character from Runaways, that how no one seems to be doing anything with that character. But I know what you mean in the sense that we're talking about the A, B characters in the sense that someone has to be doing something with someone. Otherwise, it's like, what's the point?
Yeah. But yeah, so Chris Claremont wasn't, you know, he didn't like that because he felt it interfered with, you know, with how he had basically envisioned the character. And like I say, he was pretty much seeing himself as sort of like, you know, being in charge of X-Men, you know, all things related X-Men. I mean, believe it or not, when, this was all going on, X-Men was in about its 200th issue.
Ooh.
He actually had a plan for what was going to happen round about issue 300. That's how far ahead he was looking. He had this idea that basically that Professor X, who he basically sent off into space, you know, another thing that he was basically sort of evolving, that Professor X would eventually sort of die and that Magneto would basically inherit, you know, his role completely.
That would be a cool idea.
You know, and so, but that was like, you know, another 10 years away, you know, so that's how long he actually thought that he was going to be, you know, writing the X-Men. I think he basically thought that he would never actually, you know, leave the series. And so I think that, you know, he was sort of obviously irked by you know, the fact that sort of X Factor was being brought back. I know what it did for Summers. And when he found out that Jean Grey was being
brought. Yeah, I know. Like, if he wasn't upset over the Cyclops stuff, I'm sure the Jean Grey stuff pushed him over the edge.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he, and this went when you read out, this is something I actually got from, you know, a really cool book called Marvel Comics, The Untold Story. His editor, I'm real bad at pronouncing names, but it's Anne Nocenti. Okay. She actually took him out on a Friday night for a drink to break the news to him. He actually chose that time because it was basically, it was the weekend and he wouldn't be able to basically storm into like Jim Shooter's office. He actually, when he found out about it, he apparently wanted to like ring Jim Shooter there and then, and she refused to give him his number.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, and apparently he admits that if he'd have basically got into it, he may well have actually quit Marvel at that point, because he'd basically been promised by Jim Shooter that she was never coming back, that this was going to be a death that was basically, you know, going to stick. you know, so he was basically, you know, really unhappy about this. I have to say we've sort of like, you know, the resetting the button with X Factor. At least when they did bring them back together, did have a different tone from the original series because they'd actually grown up somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd sort of, you know, they got older. So there was a little bit of a different dynamic. It wasn't like, you know, resetting everything completely, but it was definitely sort of, I think, it's one of those comics that I think possibly started the trend for actually sort of like, you know, resetting things as they were, because I can't think that any of the other comics had actually done anything like that, because the Avengers was the series that was, you know, constantly evolving. I mean, the Avengers at this time, their lineup was Captain America, Wasp, Hercules, Star Fox, the Captain Marvel, it was the Black Lady who used to turn into light.
Oh, Spectrum, yeah.
Yeah. Who else? Oh, and Black Knight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is totally different from what you would have, you know, any of, you know, what you would think of as the Avengers. But that's how it was at the time, you know, things, you know, constantly evolved.
And then they constantly do stuff like that, and even Claremont's X-Men, they would revolve the cast, or what did they have a solid cast?
Oh no, that was changing around as
yeah, that's why I figured.
Well.
Yeah, so
yeah, it was, you know, that, you know, there were sort of characters like, you know, coming in and leaving. I mean, for example, there was that lineup that we all sort of know and love, which is like sort of Wolverine, Nightcrawler, Colossus, Storm, and you know, everything. But even there, you had characters leaving, like Banshee left, and then you had Rogue coming in. And stuff, you know, so even that, you know, you did have a, you know, a little bit of a, you know, and again, Rachel Summers coming in and that sort of thing. He did have a bit of a, you know, a revolving, you know, door of characters and, you know, but which I will actually come to later on as well on that, when it comes to that.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, so I mean, I have to say with X Factor, it was done really well. And actually bringing them together and everything, and, you know, bringing Jean Grey. And I have to say that bringing Jean Grey back did actually, I think, it give a little bit of a dynamic to the comic, because it for a start, it gave them a reason to all come together. It was like, you know, the catalyst for it.
Okay.
But it also created quite a lot of sort of like, you know, drama, because obviously, Cyclops basically thought she was dead and he was now married, and so you had some sort of like, you know, turmoil, you know, driving the
team.
There was a bit of a
love triangle between Cyclops, Jean, and Madeline, right?
Yeah. Which is another thing that Claremont really hated, is that now that Jean Grey was back, you know, what does that mean for him and Maddie?
Yeah, and his happy ending that he'd found.
Yeah, and you can actually tell the first issue of, because obviously, you know, the idea was now that, you know, Jean and Scott were going to get back together. How does this make Cyclops look? Because obviously he's basically, you know, actually in the first issue, he basically, when he finds out Jean is back, he basically just, upsticks, leaves his, wife and kid and just joins off with Jean.
And
obviously it's not as simple as that, because there is like a lot of turmoil, you know, about it, but he doesn't come across well in it, because he doesn't tell Jean that he's actually married.
Yeah, he doesn't tell either, right? He doesn't tell either of their existence and what he's doing. He's two-timing both of them, but he doesn't let them know.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, what actually happens is that when he comes, he actually tries to get in touch with Madeline, and basically he basically can't be sort of like, you know, the phone line's down and everything. And she, it's as if she's basically like, you know, like, she basically tells him when he's sort of leaving, because he doesn't say why he's leaving, just said that an emergency has come up. And she basically tells him, you know, if you're leaving, that's it, you know, don't come back.
Yeah.
So then he tries to contact her and he can't contact her. But you can actually see in them, because one of the things that I think is really annoying throughout this is basically the disservice it does to Maddie, because she's the one that's wronged. But in the very first issue of X Factor, they sort of like, through her dialogue, they kind of sort of make her, they try to basically make her an unlikable character.
And that gets way worse when we get into this big crossover between X-Men and X-Factor, yes. Yeah.
But it's really funny, because obviously Claremont wasn't writing X-Factor. The portrayals, which were quite different, because after a while she basically, you know, joined the X-Men cast and Claremont's writing, she was a lot more sympathetic in that. But in the first issue as X-Factor, she's almost like a nagging wife. She's basically, she makes all these comments about how he failed as leader of the X-Men.
Uh-huh.
And then got kicked out. And then it's almost like she's sort of like basically nagging him about sort of like, you know, looking after the baby and stuff like that. And it basically portrays him as being a troubled marriage anyway.
Yeah, the marriage was on the rocks and to make things worse, that Jean's, you know, back.
So it tries to sort of give him a little bit of an out in the fact that it's not as if they're happily married and then he's just gone and left, that there's actually like, you know, problems in. But there is one really sort of like, you know, was one panel where he sort of sat up in bed and she basically says, what's wrong? And he just sort of doesn't answer. And she asked, you're thinking about Jean, aren't you? And he just says, yes. And it's like, you're reading this and you're thinking, God, this guy's a dick. Now I have to say, I actually don't mind.
I can assure you this would continue this series.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it continued to this day. I have to say though, I don't actually mind that so much, because I don't think it's bad to have characters.
Yeah. You bring that up in your article. It's like, everybody can't be a Boy Scout. Everybody can't be Captain America. Why can't we just have Cyclops be a terrible human being?
Yeah. You know, and, you know, have him that is basically, he's got problems like socializing people and that he's sort of like, you know, leaves his wife and stuff. He's a bad person. That doesn't mean he can't be a hero.
Yeah.
You know, but there are, like, I'm sure there are firefighters and policemen and stuff like that. And I've actually known a few policemen who are basically do great things for public service in their jobs, but, you know, at home are like really bad people.
Yeah.
I think you should have sort of, characters should basically have flaws, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and you know what? To a degree, they sort of kept that up. Like, obviously, they make him sort of likable with certain things. Because I guess one reason why they still want him to have that Boy Scout persona, but some of that dickish behavior, they decided to keep on Cyclops, and I think it sort of suits him well.
Yeah, and I think it has. For the present day, where stuff happened in Avengers versus X-Men, stuff like that, him basically being sort of a cold character who basically sort of like, you know, took things to like an extreme mutant rights activist.
Yeah,
you know,
I was kind of disappointed.
Progression.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed after Avengers vs. X-Men. I thought, oh, the days of Cyclops being an X-Men and being a good guy are over, and he's going to be the new Magneto. It's going to be a good idea to something you can do with the character. But you can tell as the months that went on, and especially in the Bendis stuff, they sort of walked that back. And just like you were talking about earlier, where they hit the reset button on everything, and it was just like, you had a really good idea going on there, and you know, Cyclops is not like a big enough X-Men to where the X-Men are going to suffer without him. So that could have been something cool that you could have done, and had the character evolve over the years and eventually become a bad guy, and just stick with it, and it was a good decision, and it sort of plays into what they've already done with the character, but for whatever reason why, they have to hit that reset button every now and then.
But they do that all the time there's plenty of heroes that we basically have sort of go to like, you know, like for example, Hank Pym, you know, had the thing where he sort of like, you know, began when he hit Wasp and everything. Quicksilver basically sort of like, you know, turned on the heroes and everything, but they always turn them back.
Yeah, no, I think other instances we had was Sandman at one point was an Avenger. Up until recently in Secret Wars, Doom was a huge baby face in the Fantastic Four. So you've had all these instances where you have people jump back and forth between the sides.
And Magneto.
Yeah, Magneto. Well, Magneto, I think, is straddling that anti-hero thing to where he's he's still aligned with Cyclops, and Cyclops is, they're taking the edge off of Cyclops, but Magneto is, right now I think he's straddling between, you know, good and bad, and with his title, you kind of sort of have to make him somewhat a sympathetic character. But yeah, that's another character that over the years has gone back and forth, back and forth.
So I don't see, you know, but, later on when we sort of, you know, talk about Inferno, they really tried to, like, you know, reverse things.
That was great.
We might as well, while we're on Maddie, we might as well, you know, talk about this whole.
Yeah, we keep teasing at it, but let's spell that for the folks that, prior to reading your article, and I'm sure, obviously doing this show, I've heard kind of stuff from the Inferno, and with the new Secret Wars title, I kind of know what Inferno is, but, like I said, I'm sure there's some people that didn't read or are only new to comics and want to hear about that.
Yeah, okay. I mean, just to sort of take, you know, the saga of Madeline up there, what basically how her character went is that she basically, after the first issue of X Factor, when she's sort of, you know, alone with the kid and everything, she goes missing and she turns up in, basically in the X-Men. It turns out that she's basically in, she's basically been attacked by the Marauders, and basically her baby's gone missing. She wakes up in a hospital bed and everything, and she gets in touch with the regular X-Men who she basically becomes part of the team as their sort of pilot and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically there is a storyline where the X-Men basically went into, this is something which I will come to, you know, quite later on. they basically, sort of go like underground, where they basically, the world thinks the X-Men are dead.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sort of hiding out in the Australian outback, and Maddie's part of the, you know, the team. And she basically, I really liked her as a character, because she was basically, you know, she was basically like, you know, the regular human. She had no actual powers herself, but she was like a really good character, and she had basically the turmoil of losing a child, and basically, you know, and there was a little bit of a romance going on with Havoc and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the Inferno storyline came about where she was basically corrupted, by Syme, who was basically the, you know, the head demon of Limbo, which was the realm of magic. Whenever I start, like, mentioning, staying these sagas, it sounds like I'm on drugs, because they're so, so well out there. But Syme basically manages to corrupt her into this demon called the Goblin Queen. Yeah. and she basically starts showing these, like, phoenix type powers, and she basically sort of starts this plot, and basically the Inferno is basically when Limbo, the demon world of Limbo, basically invaded Earth, and they used the Goblin Queen, you know, to set things off. Now in that Inferno was this basically massive, like, crossover.
Mm-hmm.
Between the X Factor and X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
who had basically been kept apart for a sizable run. There were these little teasers of them almost meeting and on them be sort of in the same storylines, but the two groups would never actually meet until Inferno. and it was like a real tease, because you knew eventually down the line it was going to happen.
Yeah.
Anyway, it happened in Inferno, and basically that's where you actually found out the origin of Madeline, because she'd always been presented as basically, there's always been something like a little bit mysterious about the fact that she was actually, you know, looked just like Jean Grey and everything, but
there's
it had kind of been swept aside that she was basically just like, you know, a redhead and everything. Well, it turns out in Inferno, that she basically finds out that she was actually a clone of Jean Grey created by Mr. Sinister.
Oh, Marvel and their clones.
Yeah, because Mr. Sinister, he wanted to basically, he had this obsession with Jean Grey and Cyclops, that their child would basically be the ultimate mutant. So, he basically sort of like, you know, made his own Jean Grey clone, but he couldn't actually get it to, any life into it. It was just like a failure. Mm-hmm. And then what happened is that when Phoenix, when basically Phoenix committed suicide at the end of a Dark Phoenix saga,
mm-hmm.
she basically, the Phoenix inhabited, came and basically inhabited Madeline Pride and became Phoenix. So he basically then gave her some like false memories. So she didn't actually aware of any of this, but he's then sent her off in the hopes that she would meet Cyclops and that they would get together, and then he'd be able to basically, you know, steal their child, which is what he did, because he was the one which actually had, you know, the Summer's child, or, you know.
Comic books, everybody.
Yeah. Like I said, when you sort of like tell people, whenever anybody I know who doesn't read comics will ask me something like that to explain something, and when I start giving them the, you know, story of something like this, they kind of just look on my face like, are you on drugs?
I wish I was. Yeah. Maybe it'd make a lot more sense.
It probably would, yeah. I'd probably have to be on drugs to write them. Anyway, so basically Inferno was basically, you know, the big, you know, showdown between X-Factor and X-Men, and they have this sort of like, you know, this big battle between them. But the thing is, Inferno basically tried to tie up loads and loads of loose ends.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, the Marauders storyline, which had been going on, they basically, you know, the X-Men finally get their hands on the Marauders.
Uh-huh.
Which I found brilliant at the time, because that was a storyline which had been going on, and I actually loved that rivalry.
Yeah, in fact, I'll link to that article you wrote about the Mutant Massacre on the description of this show.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
If you haven't already checked that out, I mean, that's a fantastic article, and I think, was that our first show that we did with you, or no?
It was my first article. We didn't do a show on it.
Okay.
I did shows a lot later. But yeah, that was the first article I wrote when I first started writing for you guys.
Oh, there you go. And when he says you guys, he doesn't mean Coughlin at halfguard.com. He means our original site that we came from, comicconversations.com, which I will, of course, will be linking in the description on the Halfguarded site.
Yeah. Incidentally, actually, at some point, I might have to actually, revisit that, article, because I have learned so much about the Mutant Massacre since. there is a lot more that was going on. Believe it or not, Alan Moore is involved.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I'm actually tempted at some point. I'm going to sort of, if I bring the article over to Half Guarded and basically update it with all the stuff I've learned since.
Oh, we should do that.
Yeah, definitely. Because there is a lot more to that. Because when I wrote it, I just wrote it as me being a fan reading it and my memories of it, but there was actually a lot going on behind the scenes. It should have been very different to what actually did happen.
And since we haven't done a show about that, that's another show idea that we can do down the road as well.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, so I'll have to do that at some point, but there's a hell of a story behind that. Like I said, Alan Moore's involved, so I'll leave it to
boy,
that.
Oh boy, wow.
That.
Just, what are our appetite, right? Just tease us,
yeah,
right?
Definitely.
All right.
So yes. So the Inferno storyline was basically sort of, you know, to tie up quite a lot of loose ends, and it was us. But where I have a problem with it is like myself, you know, you don't have to have all your heroes as nice guys. They should have flaws and everything. But what Inferno basically seemed to do was basically to sort of give Scott Summers an out and make out that he wasn't being the bad guy after all. Because for a start, what one of the things that he had to do was it seems that they had to kill Maddie off.
Uh-huh.
So that Jean and Scott could basically sort of like, you know, get together.
Yeah, move on,
and
guilt free.
And also they could bring up the kid themselves. Because, you know,
yeah, that is a problem,
you know,
that child.
Yeah. The child that sort of Jean Grey, Maddie and Scott had. Because if you actually, you know, after Inferno, Jean Grey basically becomes that child's mother. You know?
But de facto. Yeah, well, in the sense that it's, I guess you could say sort of biologically, you could sort of, you know, if you want to play gymnastics, say, well, biologically, you know, that was a clone of Jean Grey. So in a, you know, roundabout way, that is Jean Grey's son, even though the actual Jean Grey didn't give birth to it.
Yeah. Oh, that gets worse in a moment as well.
Oh,
when we get to the ending of Inferno, that you know, that gets even worse. But yeah, so basically what we actually did with Madeline, is not just turn her into basically the Goblin Queen into a villain, but they basically, did a retcon where it turned out that she'd been subconsciously manipulating events. So, back in the, back when Cyclops basically left the X-Men, he basically had this duel with Storm in the Danger Room to who was going to lead the X-Men. Because at the time, Storm didn't have any powers. And basically, he thought he should be leader and everything. And they basically had this duel. And Scott lost the duel, you know, that Storm beat him. And it turns out that Madeline had basically been subconsciously manipulating the fight.
Of course.
so that Scott would basically lose, and then they would basically, and she would have Scott all to herself.
This reminded me a lot of the Hank Pym stuff, in the sense that when they walked it back, when Hank Pym slammed Janet, wasn't there some storyline that he was possessed by some kind of demon or something, or an alien?
I don't remember. They basically have it. He'd had some psychological issues. Yeah. But it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know if that for certain, but it wouldn't surprise. It is the sort of thing that they would actually do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But actually, well, I mean, that's what they did with Jean, because in the Dark Phoenix saga, obviously, she became sort of like, you know, she went basically insane and basically started destroying worlds and stuff. And by actual sort of like having it that she was never, Jean Grey was never actually Phoenix, that gave her an out, you know. with Cyclops, and basically, and it wasn't just that as well. It basically turned out that she was the one that was basically, you know, manipulating, you know, basically the way that, you know, Cyclops had been behaving and everything like that. And it just sort of gave him an out. But also another thing it did is that Madeline, and despite the fact that, you know, you have sort of like all these thought bubbles to the contrary, it turns out that she basically had abandoned her child to Sinister because she basically didn't want to be reminded of Scott anymore and that she didn't care about any of it. You know, so it basically started to make, where she'd gone from like the sympathetic character who was basically, had, you know, lost her husband and lost the child and everything and was trying to desperately find, you know, fact. It basically just reversed all that. So it turned out that the only reason why she actually, you know, in the end wanted a child was so she could, like, have him as part of his sacrifice to basically open the gates between Limbo and the world. Oh, so it really did, if they could have basically turned Madeline into sort of like this Goblin Queen by having her feel that she was basically, all the things that had been wronged to her. They could have used that as sort of like, you know, justification of the sort of like, you know, turning. But they took it even to the extremes. I mean, even at the end, they had it where she basically, you know, tried to, you know, mind link with Jean Grey and basically sort of kill herself and take Jean with her, that sort of thing. It just sort of made her so unbelievably evil. And it wasn't like the character that you'd sort of, if you were reading the X-Men, it wasn't the character that you were used to. It was just too big of a step into making a bit, you know, from like just this normal everyday sort of, you know, woman into this like totally evil, you know, woman who was basically just wanting to see the world burn. And it was to me, it was just too much of a step. And it was basically all to do with basically sort of, you know, giving Jean and Scott basically an out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I mean, incidentally, some of the scenes, there's a scene where, in X-Factor where, cause this, basically when the X-Men went off supposedly to their desk, this was actually filmed all around the world. And she did this like scene where she turned to the camera and she basically said, you know, Scott, if you can hear this, you know, find our son, keep him safe, you know, goodbye. I love you sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so there was this showing this on TV and, there's this scene where Jean and Scott are in this room and it's playing on the TV and Scott Jean just sort of gets up and just sort of says, I'm sick of hearing about her. And storms nice. Out. And he's like, you bitch. this woman's lost a kid. She's off going off to death. And, all, you know, you're sort of like, you know, complaining because you haven't listened to her on TV and everything. So not a lot of people actually come out of this quite well. But I did find it, you know, rather interesting that sort of over in X Factors, Madeline was basically portrayed as this sort of like, you know, really unlikable character. And yet over in... X-Men, you know, Chris Claremont had a different take on her. But in the end, it basically, it just seemed so heavy in actual sort of, you know, trying to make her this evil just so it would be okay to kill her off. And so it would basically give, like, you know, Scott and Jean free range to basically sort of, like, you know, get together and then get a kid out of it. But also what happened as well is not only does it turn out that Madeline's basically is a clone of Jean Grey, but in the end, Jean manages to basically get all of Madeline's memories as well.
Of course.
So she's, yeah. So she basically comes away with Madeline's husband. She basically takes her kid on as her own and she gets all the nice memories that she had with Scott and everything. She gets all those as well.
Just for good measure.
It is actually quite, and Chris Claremont actually, there's a story just after Inferno, and it was more like a little comedy, piece where they did two issues. One issue was basically all the X-Men women going on a night out. And then the other one was all the X-Men guys going on a night out.
Mm-hmm.
And in the X-Men guys going on a night out, there's like this alien invasion.
Of course.
And part of this alien invasion, is basically that they've got this secret weapon that they're going to, inflict on Earth. And this weapon is basically a bomb that basically destroys all bonds. Oh, and the bomb is called a gene bomb.
Wow.
And it's actually shaped. It's basically shaped like Jean Grey. Now, I sort of think that this is basically Chris Claremont's basically sort of like, you know, his little like underhanded way.
Underhanded. It's called the gene bomb. You think that's underhanded?
Dazzle? Well, not underhanded though. But it, I mean, basically it's just, it's him basically sort of, you know, sticking it to.
It's a little on the nose.
Yeah. But, you know, but that's, he's showing there that that's how he, you know, how he felt about it.
Wow. Mm. Okay. If I want to maintain my sanity, I feel like we got to talk about something else now. Oh God. Oh God. Okay. Let's move on to our next segment. Dazzle, what have you been reading as of late? I have to imagine it's something a lot less complicated and a lot more fun than, Inferno and all this Madeline and Jean Grey stuff.
Yeah. To be honest, I've been reading quite a bit, but I've not been overwhelmed by anything lately. I've been reading the 1812.
That's fine.
Which I'm still enjoying. Uh-huh. You know, I personally think that should have been like an ongoing series. Mm. That I think that could have been really
good.
That's
weird because me and the guys haven't much care for that. I mean, the art's really good. And you've had a couple issues that were really good. And it's not my cup of tea, and I'm glad you're enjoying it. But when you said 18, my first thought was to go to 1872, and I'm really liking that Western. But if you like 1812, that's good too.
Oh, sorry, I meant 1872.
Ah, there we go. So you made the same mistake I did.
Yeah. So I'm getting the wrong thing.
Yeah. 1872. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. 1872. I just think it's one. I think it's just like a, you know, a good, you know, Western with all the characters. And I think it's something that they could have done, you know, a lot. It's a story that they basically could have kept, they could keep going.
Well, that's the plan. They're going to continue it going with, it's going to be predominantly a Red Wolf title, but it's going to still be all the same characters and all the same timeline pieces. So when I heard they were doing a Red Wolf series post Secret Wars, I thought, oh, they're just going to bring him into modern day 616. But yeah. Apparently we're seeing all these titles that they're announcing. I think there's an X-Men 92 continuing series. And that's going to be a separate universe onto itself. So I have to imagine the Red Wolf title is going to be another separate universe onto itself to where, it exists primarily in the past in this alternate universe with all these, I guess you would say composite characters of, Marvel 616 characters.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Although I think if they were doing that, they could have kept the Steve Rogers character around for a bit.
That's true.
You know, they could have basically sort of had him for like about six issues or something before killing him off. But it feels like they'll actually, like, and also the Iron Man thing, you know, they could have sort of basically kept that, you know, as an ongoing thing as opposed to basically, at the moment we seem to be basically like, you know, rushing through everything to get it. But whatever, I'm glad it's staying around anyway, because I think it is a real good series. I read, Red Skull, which I was sort of, I was enjoying, and then when it got to the final issue, it was kind of.
Yeah, I joined the club here. I really liked the first issue. I put it over. I mean, the guys weren't all too keen on reading the book. They weren't sure if, you know, maybe we should read this, maybe we shouldn't. I read the first issue. I really loved it. I thought it was going to be sort of a Thunderbolts title, but then it very quickly became, it's going to be a Magneto Red Skull book, and I don't care.
Yeah. Also, it became like a siege issue.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, and we've already got basically, you know, the siege where the sort of, and again, that's another one which I really enjoyed.
That's a solid title. That, like, honestly, I think that's up there in the higher echelon of all the Secret War books. And I think that for sure is supposed to play into the overall storyline of the Secret Wars book. So.
Yeah. But yeah, I really enjoy that. And especially because we got the Fury as well. Yeah, that was quite cool. But yeah, that one I really did enjoy. I'm still reading the Star Wars books.
Oh, okay. What do you think of those? Are you reading all of them or just the Star Wars Aaron one?
I'm reading Star Wars, I'm reading Darth Vader, and I've started reading Lando as well.
Oh, okay. Lando is one of those books I didn't think I was going to like, but it's a limited series. It's only 5 issues, and we're getting towards the end, and it's a fun book. It's a solid title.
Yeah. Actually, as I'm reading it, though, I realize that when you think about it, you don't really know that much about the Lando character.
Exactly. So in the sense that you don't know that much, but at the same time, if you're a writer, Charles Soule, you can get away with doing a lot of stuff because, you know, nobody knows anything. So you can introduce and add whatever you want to the character.
Yeah. But yeah, so that one I've been enjoying. And like I said, I like the Darth Vader one and the Star Wars one. I'm not touching anything which is to do with the build to the next film. Have I mentioned this, that I'm basically not watching?
You know what? Good for you, because I read the first issue, the Greg Rucka series, and I read the first issue, and I'm like, I'm not getting what I wanted. I thought we were going to get some kind of crossover. And apparently that's not what this book was supposed to be. Like, they're obviously kind of being tongue-in-cheek with the way they're promoting it, but they're supposed to be a actual novel, not a graphic novel or a comic book, but an actual, you know, hardcover book that's supposed to cover the gap. So I guess if you want to, you can read it, but I certainly wouldn't blame you if you decide not to read it. No. But
I'm basically avoiding anything to do with the films completely.
You say you haven't even seen the trailer yet, right?
No. Oh. No, I'm trying to avoid anything, because in December I just want to go see it and just basically know nothing about it. You know, I keep seeing the odd stills, because obviously on Twitter people will post, whenever there's a trailer or something, people will post stills from it. So I keep glimpsing them, but I'm not like looking. I just basically want to sort of try this thing.
Somebody in the office where I work, it was their birthday, and they're a big fan of Star Wars, so they went out to like the party store and they bought them all these things for the new Star Wars. And there's all these things, I'm like, all these characters, I'm like, I don't know who that is, I don't know who that is, I don't know who that is. How is this Star Wars? Like, I understand they wanted to get ahead of the movie, but when you're out already releasing promotional stuff with all these new characters, I'm like, doesn't this sort of defeat the point? Like, I realize it is Star Wars and it's going to play into that, but like, why with all these promotional things ahead of time?
Yeah, but, I mean, they did that with the prequels. I mean, you know, they had sort of like, you know, Darth Maul pretty much everywhere. You know, the figures and the Jar Jar Binks and everything, but we were selling all that before everyone realized, you know, what a bad character it was and everything. So I've been reading the Star Wars stuff. Actually, but there's one thing I need to get off my chest. I've started somewhere I like buying graphic novels of all the stories that are sort of like, you know, well, from when I was around a kid, like reading, you know, the sort of, you know, the old series and everything. And I've just got, there was this, Walt Simonson had this run on Thor.
This run? you're casually like, you know, you know, for those of you who don't know, there's this guy Walter Simonson. He had a marginal Thor run. No, that's the Thor run everyone refers to, and it's pretty much the Thor run.
Yeah,
I mean the Aaron run's great, and it's sort of like a silver medal. But when you think of Thor runs, that's the guy who you think of.
Yeah, because he really basically did. He basically took Thor into Asgard and everything, and really made it, you know, work as a series and everything. We really got into the mythology, but sort of did like a modern take of it. In fact, one of my favorite single pages from a comic ever is the one where the executioner stands on the bridge to hell and like basically sort of like, you know, holds the line while everyone else can escape.
Nice.
It's this really famous scene. It's basically where the executioner is. There's a death scene basically, but it's just done really, really well. It's great moment. I'll have to sort of find a page for it to show you at some point. It's really, really great stuff. And the artwork in it, obviously, it was absolutely great. But I got this graphic novel a few days ago, from that run, and then for some reason they've basically re-inked it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's horrible.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You think something like that, where they go in and redo the art, you think that'd make things better, but you said they made it worse?
Yeah. Oh. The art's the same, but they've basically sort of, you know, and they've basically sort of like, you know, just changed the inking of it and everything. And it just misses the actual, you know, the tone of what the artwork actually was.
I'm sorry to hear that.
back when, I think it was when Ted Turner bought over rights to all the classic black and white movies, they tried something where they would colorize the films. So they would like, you know, colorize Casablanca and all the Laurel Hardy films and all these. And it looked absolutely terrible. It was all like, you know, one, it just looked really fake and one tone. And this kind of reminds me of that somewhat. It just, the color, it looks, it basically loses the actual, the tone and the depth of it and everything. I don't know why they've done it, but you know, that's just, you know, my little rant about that. It's something that I don't get why they've done that. It spoiled some of the actual, you know, the artwork.
Is there a name for this so we can tell our listeners to avoid it like the plague?
I won't say avoid it, because if you've never actually read, you know, that run.
But isn't there a non-retouched version of all those stories?
I don't know if there is.
Oh.
There may have been at some point, but it's probably sort of thing that's sort of like gone out of print and you have to pay a load of money for now.
Oh, that's horrible.
You know, so I wouldn't say avoid it, but just as a little thing, I don't like it when they sort of, you know, touch up the, you know.
Cause if I recall, I read some of that stuff and maybe I didn't mind it cause I didn't know any better, but, I think there maybe is some stuff where they haven't gone and retouched it.
Yeah, I mean, it could be that I sort of remember it from the time, so it just sort of conflicts with how I remember it, but it just doesn't fit with the actual, you know, it looks like they've sort of, it's like they've done it with felt tip pen. They've basically sort of pretty much colored everything in, and it's like, that's not what the artwork is. It was supposed to look little bit sort of like, you know, off-worldly, a little bit sort of like, you know, fancy type, like, you know, so it's just, I just think it's sort of like, you know, spoilt it somewhat.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Like basically going onto the Mona Lisa and basically sort of like, you know, you know, giving a lipstick or something. I don't know.
Oh, wow. All right, Daz, is there anything you want to preview for our next show? I know we talked about your Mutant Massacre that you may do down the line, but is there anything that may supersede that you really want to talk about before we do that?
Yeah. Well, for a start, it's something we've talked about before is me doing a one-off on British wrestling.
Ooh, nice. Yeah, because we have the Hofgaard site. Like I said, if you haven't already, check out all of the Daz's articles where he covers the ones that really stick out, those fantastic Invicta articles, and I'll be sure to link to that as well. But, if you haven't already, Daz has been writing tons of MMA stuff for our Hofgaard site. So if you haven't already, check that out. That's great stuff. But it's cool that you're actually going to do, a article about, British wrestling. Did you want to do a radio show about that as well? Cause like
I think that would be a good idea.
Yeah, this is pretty much, this show is your baby. So like I said, I'm here just to, you know, I'm your co-pilot. I'm doing all the technical stuff, but this is for the most part your show. So if you want to do it, by all means.
Yeah. I think that would be a good idea. And especially cause it's one of the British wrestling. It's one of these things that sort of, I was there for a certain period, you know, when it was on the TV in this country. And it's, I know there's quite a lot of like the Ring of Honor guys, you know, particular people like Colt Cabana and stuff who sort of like, you know, really rave over it and have sort of like, you know, tried to adopt that into it. You know, for somebody like me who actually saw it at the time, I think it might be good night to just reminisce a little bit about some of the characters. It's not going to be like a massive, like all encompassing thing because you could get a book out of it. But I think, you know, to talk about some of the people like Rollerball Rocco, you know, Giant Taste Axe and Big Daddy, and guys like, I mean, like, and Fit Finlay,
mm-hmm.
who had a run in, you know, WWE not so long ago, and was like, you know, really good, even though he was such, into his 50s or something. You know, I remember him back in, you know, the days when he was on TV in his prime and stuff, so I think there'd be sort of some stuff, you know, that would be sort of, you know, maybe a fun episode to do.
Nice.
So there's that one. But the one that I was sort of like alluding to earlier that I actually mentioned in the article is the, I want to do like a follow-up piece to this one. Because while X Factor was going on at the same time, you had another team of X-Men, which I think has sort of been forgotten somewhat as a lineup. And you mentioned, as you mentioned earlier, that we're sort of like, you know, teams were evolving and Chris Claremont actually being like, you know,
casting and stuff. I hope it's what I think you're talking about.
Yeah, it's basically the lineup when it was sort of, it was Storm, Wolverine and Rogue who were like your sort of like your long timers. But you also had in it, you had Dazzler,
uh-huh.
you had Longshot, you had Psylocke and you had Havoc.
Uh-huh.
And it's this team that I really, really liked.
Oh,
but
okay.
I think whenever sort of people think of the old X-Men teams, you always seem to think of, you know, the original team or the thing called the ones where they did the reboot when it was basically sort of like, you know, Colossus and Nightcrawler.
Oh, yeah, the Giants, you know, the Giant Size Annual, yeah.
Yeah, so it was that, you know, so they're the two that people always think of, whereas I think this other one was sort of as being forgotten somewhat, so I wanted to basically do a little piece on that.
Oh,
I'm guessing that's not the team that you were thinking
of. No, that's not the team I was thinking of, because when you were, in your article, you mentioned all the other X-Men teams, you had the X-Men, the X-Factor, and I'm like, if Dazin doesn't do an article about this somewhere down the road, I'm going to be upset, or maybe I can do it myself, since, you know, I don't really write a whole lot for Half-Carded, so that might be one of those things I want to investigate, because of what I've heard, it's really good, and like I said, with that Marvel Unlimited app, I may go back and read it, but I really want to get a good grip on the New Mutants.
Oh, yeah. That, actually, that's something I'd like to write as well.
So when you brought up all these teams, and in the article, you keep mentioning New Mutants. I'm like, oh, yeah. If he doesn't at some point do a New Mutants article and we do a radio, yeah, I'm going to be very disappointed.
Yeah. Incidentally, because we're talking about reboots and stuff like that, that is one that I really, really hated.
Oh, really?
When they actually rebooted the New Mutants a few years back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because that was, you know, because that was like really resetting things. Because the, you know, the New Mutants, what I loved about that as a comic is it, they basically evolved as they got older.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the New Mutants as the school thing, and then they became a bit more sort of rebellious. They became like, you know, they sort of like, you know, they left the mansion and stuff. And then they became like X-Force. And then all the New Mutants basically all went off for separate ways and did their own things. I mean, you even had like sort of like, you know, Doug being killed off, and then he came back as Doug Locke and everything like that. And then when we did the new series, they reset everything about them.
Oh.
So it was, and I just really, really hated that. Also hated what, especially with Cannonball. Because Cannonball, I remember there was an issue where he was basically promoted from X-Force into the main X-Men team.
Uh-huh.
And it was just this, I remember it as being this like really awesome issue, because it was like you'd seen this guy grow up. You'd seen him in the New Mutants as a kid, learning his powers and everything, and then sort of doing the rebellious X-Force way. And when he was basically called up of a team, and like he got his first like mission, like, you know, are you ready to go sort of thing? It was like you'd basically, you know, you'd seen a character evolve.
Yeah.
And then when it came to like, when they did like the reset and they took him back again, it just felt like they basically just sort of like, you know, just sort of, it's Chris, I actually mentioned this in the article, and one of the things that Chris Claremont really hated was he got the impression that there was a lot of new writers who came through.
Oh yeah, and there was nostalgic and they wanted to use the characters
and it was
that they
like,
grew up with.
Oh, we're writers now. I'm going to write about characters that I grew up with. So I'm going to like, you know, it's reform Alpha Flight, or I'm going to, you know, reform New Mutant. And it's like they were basically sort of like, you know, getting to play with, you know, the toys that they basically, had, you know, grew up with sort of
thing. I'm going to make but, Base look like the way he did originally.
If I got a job as a Marvel writer and then started writing Deathshead or Rom.
That'd be awesome, like by the way. You know, just so you know.
Yeah. So yeah, so that was, you know, so yeah, it's got a bit of tangent there. But yeah, New Mutants, actually, that would be a good one to do.
Yeah. Well, I can assure you, as far as the Cannonball stuff, now he's on the Avengers, so at least you got some kind of payoff for him, growing up.
Yeah. But that would be a good one, because like New Mutants actually took over from the original X-Men concept, you know, the concept of being school kids learning their sort of powers and everything like that, you know. So New Mutants are probably, they'll get their due at some point.
Okay, I think with that all the way, we're going to wrap things up. And as long as we're talking about things you don't like, I noticed you didn't give me an outro for this week's show. So from all of us at halfguard.com, thanks for checking out the show, and see you guys later.
Bye.
Hey yo, you dealing with the X Factor.
I got everything I ever wanted, and I'll never give that back.
Yo.
Oh, I know you hate X Factor, but you ain't gotta look at me like that. I said you ain't gotta look at me like that.
I know you're watching, but you don't even know shit. What you looking at? What you looking at?
It will be televised.